2009 to 2016, I led a large junior high ministry here in West Michigan, where I live. And that time frame is the exact time when we put the internet in the pockets of children for the first time in human history, right? So I'm watching kids now carry the very thing that almost destroyed me as an adult who struggled with pornography, right? I then looked at us putting that in the pockets of 12-year-olds, and it terrified me. Because junior high is this incredibly developmentally critical, spongy, awesome time in the life of any human on earth, but particularly here, in America, where most of the audiences that I speak to and you speak to, right? It is a critical, critical time where our children will either emerge from junior and early senior high prepared or unprepared for many other years and experiences in the rest of their life. And this is the exact time we dropped this, incredibly intelligent technology.
Welcome to Parenting Teens Today with Jesse LeBeau.
Here we are, ladies and gentlemen. I'm so excited. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while now. You've been a busy guy, but for all of those who are just tuning in and checking this out right now, I am here with a guy who is leading a charge in one of the most pivotal battles in young people's mind, and it's called Protect Young Eyes with Chris McKenna. Chris, I'm so excited to have you here. How are you?
Hey, Jesse, I am great. I think you're warmer than I am, given the time of year and where we're talking, you being kind of in the Southwest, I'm up in the Midwest, but other than that, I'm loving this conversation and looking forward to it, so.
Dude, me too. I have been just absolutely obsessing with this topic of the phone and technology and social media, because every day I'm having conversations with parents, and the common factor that I see is them addicted to their phone, not wanting to be social, not wanting to be around other people, withdrawing from their family when it comes to dinner and everything. And I just see it as such a crucial thing. If they can master their relationship with their phone, not just kids, but also the parents, I feel like it seems like the phone has the upper hand these days. But as I was driving here, Chris, I was thinking of something my dad used to tell me when I was probably about middle school age. And he'd said, guard your mind, protect the thoughts that you have and what you put into your head. Because once it goes in there, you can never get it out. And I remember that being like an interesting thing at the time when I was a kid, when he said it. But as an adult looking back, it's like, wow, I don't know if it was he was as wise or profound in the moment as I gave him credit for. But man, I feel like this is such a huge topic. So would you be willing to share a little bit of your story of how you got along this path and got this passion for leading kind of the crusade on this?
Yeah. So I've had a couple of different jobs over the years, Jesse, right? My degree is in accounting and business. I was in business for 12 years as a consultant, but I was then called into ministry. So from 2009 to 2016, I led a large junior high ministry here in West Michigan, where I live. And that time frame is the exact time when we put the internet in the pockets of children for the first time in human history, right? So I'm watching kids now carry the very thing that almost destroyed me as an adult who struggled with pornography, right? I then looked at us putting that in the pockets of 12-year-olds, and it terrified me. Because junior high is this incredibly developmentally critical, spongy, awesome time in the life of any human on earth, but particularly here, in America, where most of the audiences that I speak to and you speak to, right? It is a critical, critical time where our children will either emerge from junior and early senior high prepared or unprepared for many other years and experiences in the rest of their life. And this is the exact time we dropped this, incredibly intelligent technology right into their pockets, and we expect them to get it right every single time. And so I launched a closed Facebook group. I just started doing some research for parents in 2014 that led to a website. And I lead a team of 5 presenters, and we do a lot of work in schools and churches like you do, speaking on specifically the topic though of digital wellness, A lot of work in faith-based schools, which then elevates to digital discipleship. You know, it's interesting you mentioned that phrase from your dad. That's exactly, you know, if people were to visit us, they would see our logo. There's a padlock with a heart on the logo. And that comes from not only guarding your mind, but guarding your heart, right? Because those things that enter your eyes bounce off your brain and stick to your heart. And they leave stains in your brain and they stick to your heart and they follow you. And we have this idea in our heads that kids are resilient, they'll bounce back. No, it's that kids are adaptive, right? Kids are incredibly adaptive. They roll with stuff. They complain a lot less than we do as adults about the world. Then later on, they'll exhibit wounds and experiences that we didn't even know, right, had taken place. And I think we live in a time where there are micro traumas, micro experiences going on in the lives of kids we don't even realize. Things are exposed to online. Kids are being exposed to way too much, way too soon, and it is radically changing their childhood. And you see this, and I see this through that screen, and we have got to do something about it. So that's the spirit behind Protect Young Eyes and what we do. And we have a lot coming up just to really keep pushing this mission in the next year or so.
Yeah, so critical. I when I first began speaking, kind of the fun sweet spot for me was high school age kids. And as it kind of progressed over the last 10 years, I saw that the middle school age is actually being forced to grow up faster and faster, and they're exposed to more things younger and younger. And it felt for me like more of a calling to talk to those kids, because they're making these decisions with their minds and with their hearts, like you said, that could set them down two very different paths for the rest of their life. And it feels like it's just these decisions that are having to be made younger and younger. Is that something that you've seen as well?
It is. So we have an inverse relationship going on with maturity and preparedness for the world. Now, I'm not going to put all of it on social media, because there's quite a bit of this that also can be pinned on parents who have overprotected their children outside in the real world, where they should be throwing balls, getting bruises, and bouncing around outside. We've overprotected them from the world that actually creates resilience in them. And we've underprotected them in the world that is robbing them of their innocence and robbing them of their childhood by putting them in front of 10,000 mirrors of opinions. And we wonder why they're anxious. We wonder why they feel this just pressure to perform and to live up to things. And what I mean by this inverse relationship, Jesse, is by exposing our young people too much, too soon, to information way ahead of schedule. You talk to child therapists and psychologists and family counselors. We, as humans, have templates inside of our brain that are programmed to receive and process information during different phases of life in a certain sequence, in a certain order. And we are exposing our young people to information too soon, ahead of schedule. So what we have is an acceleration of maturity downward, where 7-year-olds are the new 10-year-olds and 10-year-olds are the new 15-year-olds in terms of what they're seeing. I hear it all the time. You want to know what's wrong with technology today? Just talk to elementary school teachers. We see it in the micro with our kid. They see it in the macro in their classroom with 25 versions of your kid, with fourth graders who come into school moaning because of things they've heard, sexual content on TikTok and things, and mistreating each other and mistreating, right? So that is the acceleration of maturity downward. And then on the other side of things, when you look at young adults, because they haven't spent enough time in the real world with real relationships, in real conversation and good, real, healthy conflict with the real world, they are not resilient. They don't know how to manage stress. They don't know how to be alone with their thoughts. They don't know how to manage a hard professor or a hard class or a hard life, because they haven't developed some of these real world skills that are absolutely necessary in a difficult world. So we have decelerated maturity upward, because I'm telling you, porn and video games and everything that the digital world offers is extremely satisfying neurologically and is a horrible surrogate for the real version of those things. Yet it's an easy trade when you get older to go, okay, yeah, of course I want to play video games. It feels great. I don't want to get a job. So you see this inverse sort of maturity, right? Accelerating downward, decelerating maturity upward. And it's us, Jesse. We've done this, right? Yeah. We have no one to blame but us.
Yeah.
So,
and many of it, you know, as they say, it's with the best of intentions. Like, you don't like seeing your kids sad or hurting or in pain. So you want to do something to cheer them up, to make them happy, but you're coddling them and they're not developing those real life skills that you're talking about that they need to be able to have some grit, have some resilience, and get through adversity. And I can attest to exactly what you're saying. Every day, no exaggeration, we have multiple people start conversations with us and they're saying, my kid is 11 going on 30, going on 20, going on 17. So there's this, at the bottom, they're maturing and exposed to these things too early. And then on the other side, when they're 18 and getting ready to venture out on their own, your job as a parent, prepare them for the road ahead, you know, so that they could stand on their own 2 feet. And these kids can't even get out of the car to go into the grocery store or order a Starbucks by themselves because it gives them social anxiety. So I hear
you. Absolutely.
Loud and clear. And for all of those listening right now, there's an awesome documentary called Childhood 2.0 that you can watch totally free. It's on YouTube. And Chris, you were in it, which was, I didn't know. So that was awesome to see you pop up and you know, share some of your expertise. But not trying to scare tactic or scare anybody here, but can you get and kind of paint a little bit of a picture of the reality of what is going on with kids in their interactions online that maybe parents aren't even aware of that's going on, just to kind of set a baseline?
Yeah. And you said something really important there. I'm not going to scare. I'm just going to state things very objectively for every parent listening to this. All right. I'm going to state something objectively. This is a hill that I will die on. No middle school child is a better version of him or herself emotionally, spiritually, neurologically, or relationally because of the presence of social media or a smartphone in their pocket. The very best version of every child who is not in high school doesn't include any of those digital spaces. Mm-hmm. Now, are there minuscule exceptions to that? A child who maybe is type 1 diabetic and has some accommodation for something and it works through an app? Yes. Are there children who have been so mistreated, say, in the foster system by the real world? And the digital world is some of the only relief for life that they find. Yes, there are small percentages of those children. But may we not apply the exception to the norm? Your children, for many of you listening to this, your children are the best version of themselves in the analog world, all right? So I just want to start off the conversation with that. That's not scare. That's fact. That's not scare. That's science. That's not scare. That's every child development expert out there that I know of telling me that there is, the evidence is just mounting. Okay. So we've got to stop believing our own sort of inner voice or the marketing of Apple or all of these, all of this noise that is telling us the opposite. Because, and I know my audience like yours, Jesse, it's a lot of mamas listening to this, all right? And I'll say something to you moms, listen to this and watch Childhood 2.0, and I think you'll hear this loud and clear through the things that I say. Listen to your heart. Listen to your heart. If you've ever said to yourself, I'm so glad none of this existed when I was a kid to your girlfriends, then why in the world is what would have been toxic for your childhood not toxic for theirs, right? We've got to think, kind of wake up to some realities. I believe firmly that we're going to look back on this like tobacco at some point, like the ads that used to be doctors promoting cigarettes, right? And these things will go, yep, we did it. We did it again. How did we do it again? And that's because it's a lot more difficult to prove causation. And it's not the only thing, as you and I have pointed to. We are over-parenting. We are over-protective, right? We've lived through some traumas as Gen X and millennial parents were, we watched Columbine on TV, we watched 9/11 on TV, we have algorithms that feed us the worst version of humanity all the time because that's what people click on. I get it. It's not easy to be a non-fear-based parent today. But honestly, the real world is about as safe as it was in 1960 for our children.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Even though the algorithm is trying to tell you a whole different story, right? So, Childhood 2.0 tries to unpack in sort of chapters issues around sexting and some of the complexities of that issue and the sharing of nude photos. Self-generated content is somewhat sometimes what it's referred to. The issue of pornography. I was exposed to pornography as a young child that really sort of has developed my passion and my desire to help as many young people as possible break free from this issue and for us to speak openly as parents about this issue. And then just the overall mental strain, the movie, the documentary talks a lot about some of those pressures and that we've been sort of unpacking all along here so far. So it does come with a guide to guide some questions. It's maybe the thing that you get together with some friends to watch, then have some discussion because author Jonathan Haidt, who's written The Coddling of the American Mind, he's about to publish another book here soon about the anxious generation. He talks about collective action problems, right? Collective action is when you have a whole group kind of going one way. So it stinks to be on the island that's not going that way. And kids who have parents who say delay or don't give them a smartphone or don't give them social media, they're swimming against the collective action of all of their classmates. So it's a really lonely place for kids to be. And so I want tribes of parents, groups of parents. You talked about speaking to younger and younger. Jesse, I want to round up every first, second, and third grade, parents of first, second, and third graders on Earth and get them in a room and all agree not to give this stuff out so that we can start creating grades of sixth graders who's had parents for the last 4 years all agree, and then seventh graders, right? You've got to get in front of this because otherwise you are the only kid. And the 13-year-old version of you and the 12 or 13-year-old version of me never would have wanted to have been that kid. So I totally get it, right? Those are some of the complex issues that the documentary tries to unpack. And, I hope it's helpful to parents who might watch it.
Yeah, no, it's really, really good. And that's one of the things I actually wanted to ask you was when one of the biggest excuses that you hear from parents, like if I could say, hey, if you just take this out of your own hand, you could be infinitely more happy, successful, less anxious, all of these things. I don't think most adults could set the phone down, let alone a child whose brain is still developing. But that one excuse that comes back is, well, then they'll be the only kid that doesn't have the phone. And I'm seeing this with parents, and it's like, you spelled it out really well. It's this thing where, well, you wouldn't have that logic if they were talking about doing drugs or robbing stores or assaulting people, but with it, when it comes to the phone, and I think almost all people would agree with what you said of like, yeah, I don't think any kid is a better version of themselves in all the areas of their life with having a phone and having social media, yet still they all have them. So besides getting all the parents collectively to do that, if it's too,
Right.
which is tough, if it's too late where all the parents are already in and we haven't gotten ahead of it, which is where we are now for a lot of people maybe listening. What other things would you say to someone who said, well, we don't want our kid to be the weird kid that doesn't have the internet?
Well, there's a couple of things I would say. I think we live in a time where us parents often know the parents of our kids' friends less than we did years ago. Right? So, what I would say to those parents is, have you actually reached out? Have you had a conversation with some of these other parents? Could you find some common ground to say that when the kids get together, that there are certain expectations around technology, or that you decide that you're going to have a text thread because your son or daughter has texting and not Snapchat, that's the way that they are going to communicate, because you have taken the step as a parent to reach out and have a conversation in this tribe of parents that is around the kids that your kid is hanging out with to come up with some way. Chances are some of them are wrestling with the same sort of thing, and they just sort of need somebody to give them permission to agree with them, because they haven't had the courage to maybe make some of those decisions, or, you know, for whatever reason. So first, I would invite us as parents to have the courage to step up and to say something, not in judgment. You're not judging them for the decision you've made, but you have a right. If your child is hanging out with other children who have access to these digital spaces, then you have a right to know what is in those digital spaces, have open and honest conversations about it. It's the same thing my mom used to ask and talk about when I would go to a friend's house, and she would say, well, do they have Showtime, Cinemax, or HBO? Like, that was what was going to destroy my childhood. Later, MTV got added to the list. But, you know, I want us to have not only more of these conversations with our kiddos, but I want us to have more of these conversations with the parents of the kiddos that ours are hanging out with, so that we can collectively do something about it. And then if you still decide that you are going to allow your kid to have some of these digital spaces, then incorporate both relational and technical guidelines, you know, and guardrails around your kid. Because we're always, given my, you know, background at Ernst & Young, where I was a risk management senior manager, I see everything professionally and parenting it through the lens of risk mitigation. And so are there ways to mitigate risk in digital spaces that our kids are on? Sure. That's why we have 5 layers of digital protection that we talk about, that if you say yes, then you incorporate a balance of both relational and technical guardrails around your kiddo to ensure they don't do themselves harm. So those are a couple of things that I would say in that situation. Again, it's all through the mindset of mitigating risk. You know your kids best, moms and dads listening and watching this. You know your kid best. And if you think they're ready, okay. But understand that you've now invited 100 million people into their life. And I want to make sure that you mitigate risk around, because it's not that you don't trust them. I would ask you, do you trust all of them? It's not that you don't trust your son or daughter. It's do you trust all of them with the heart and the mind of your son or daughter? And that's the question that I want us to be constantly asking, whether they're 14 or 18, constantly asking. So,
spoiler alert, don't trust them. that's my answer. Man, in that documentary, it lays out how scary it is. And we have lots of kids all the time who are being contacted by strangers pretending to be kids their age. And a lot of these kids use this as like a Snapchat as a dating app, and it recommends new people, and they don't even know who's on the other side of that screen. It was honestly, they made a new account, and within like less than 10 minutes, I think it was, they had predators that were going and trying to reach out and
talk. Oh yeah, the bark experiment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So man, I love that. It leads to parents having to be brave, courageous, to have uncomfortable conversations. You literally spelled out an exact situation with my nephew. Of all the kids on the baseball team are all in a group chat on Snapchat. And so it's like, oh, you kind of get left out. But to have that conversation with the parents, hey, let's do this thing, but let's do it on here where it doesn't disappear and there aren't things that are being said that it could get them in trouble. And it's just going to be better all around not to be on there.
Yeah. Yeah. Or even I'll use Snapchat, right, as an example. And I would love if Snapchat made a text only version that didn't allow you to attach pictures. It's just a Snapchat Lite. That's an idea I'd love for them to roll out. But anyway, even in that situation, make it abundantly clear as a parent that, hey, if our sons are going to be on Snapchat, which is a limbic system monster for young men because of the risk of them believing that someone has sent them a DM that is hot and they're not, and now they're pulled into a sextortion scheme, which is a whole separate issue. If you are going to have teenage sons on Snapchat and you know some of those other parents, just say, hey, if you ever see anything or hear anything that doesn't look right from my son, I want you to tell me. You have full permission. I will not be. And same, we're going to all sort of be in this together, because if our boys are going to be on Snapchat, there's risk attached to that. And we, I want you all helping me to make sure that we get this right. Again, it's opening up that conversation with the other parents, because Snapchat was not made with 15-year-old boys in mind. It was not made with them in mind. So,
yeah, that's so true. That's a tough one. So you're not necessarily off the bandwagon for Snapchat. Do you think kids, if you were going to put your opinion on it, can have it, but within boundaries and that kind of thing? Or is it better to just to eliminate it altogether?
Well, our line is pretty clear, Jesse. We don't believe that any child should have a smartphone until into high school. It's not necessary in junior high. We have kid-friendly devices that exist now. And you may be an affiliate with some. I know that I am. We've tested them. They didn't exist when my daughter, who's now 19, was in junior high. But now they do, right? There's a whole slew of them out there. Bark and Gab and Pinwheel that are out there. They're great. When it comes to social media, we have the hashtag delay is the way. I want a 16-year-old to have social media. It's a driver's license kind of thing. They'll neurologically, that's the best. I think that's the spot and above. And there's a reason for that developmentally. It's because I want children for as long as possible, and particularly during the junior high to senior high transition, to develop relationships face-to-face instead of screen-to-screen. Because the science is starting to point toward transitions as points of vulnerability for some of the lies and some of the dissonance that social media causes. There's a study out of the UK that pointed toward puberty and or those junior high to senior high transition times, and also the transition from graduation to your freshman year of college. Why? It's because during those times, Jesse, as you and I both know from working with kids for years, that's when you feel the most anxiety about who you are and the rest of the world. Therefore, you're looking to others for how they're experiencing that transitional time. And so what you get is the perfectly polished social media version of their experience. And now your mundane, horrible version doesn't compare to that. So you start to feel additional stress because you're comparing your IRL in real life version of the experience to their digital version. And of course, it doesn't look quite as pretty, quite as polished, quite as filtered. And so you feel a little bit worse. So it just creates those transitions, create the digital world creates vulnerabilities during those transitions that I just want us to be really cognizant of, which is why we've set up some of those just firm guidelines. Get them to high school, get them past some of those developmental phases so that they know how to do this. You and I looking at each other talking.
Yeah. Yeah.
As opposed to the 5-inch version. So,
yeah, no, that's so huge. I agree with you. I'm on board 100%. I see it just ruining kids' lives, their ability to have social skills, their ability to connect, their ability just to be happy and have an attention span. It is ruining their lives. And again, it's like, if you know this, then you got to take some steps, and the best thing you could do is get ahead of it. Like you're saying, let's get ahead of it. Let's start having these conversations with other parents. Let's come up with a plan and have some open and honest communication and dialogue. You know, you have this thing, the one thing every kid needs to hear. Can you talk about that?
Oh man. Yeah. So I really believe that as parents, our children would benefit from us approaching their use of technology with more curiosity and more empathy. And so, Jesse, when I see a kid who is struggling with putting a game down because it's so addictive, or I see a kid who is struggling with pornography, or a kid who can't put TikTok down, or whatever it might be, the first thought that I've trained myself to have is to think this is not their fault. Mm. And I want parents to say that like out loud to kids, honey, like if your child is coming to you because they're struggling, you discover they're struggling, they're looking at something, do whatever, they need to know immediately that most of what they're experiencing online is not their fault, that they are the victim of technology that has been weaponized, crafted to do the very thing that they're struggling with. When I see a child that is struggling with any of those things, our response should be that is a perfectly predictable response for a perfectly tuned machine created by the most brilliant software engineers on earth. So I need our kiddos to hear as often as possible that we understand that they can come to us, that it's not their fault, honey. There's going to be a consequence, but man, I love you so much. We're going to get through this because, as you know, and I know, when kids experience difficult things in the real world or the digital world, I believe that there's two things they need to know from the adults that care for them almost instantly.
Yeah.
Number one, am I going to be okay? And number two, are you still okay with me? And I want our kids to know that, right? So that idea of it's not your fault, it's not free of consequence, it's free of shame. I don't want our kids to walk around with shame for some of these things, for a device that the 14-year-old version of us would have done the exact same thing on, right? So it's a bit of a mind shift change for us as parents that I think changes our whole posture in front of our kids in a yeah. digital world that is desperately trying to make them screw up.
Man, that's so good. I feel like it's, like you said, no person has the ability, the discipline that to withstand what is put together by the people who make casinos and these big technologies that's hitting our dopamine. Right. Like, I haven't met the person who can withstand it without some type of systems in place. So to think a kid is just going to be able to maneuver those waters and be fine is just absolutely insane. So I love that. I love that they need to hear that, that it's not your fault and that it's going to be okay. We can get through this together. I wanted you to talk a little bit, if you wouldn't mind, about what is digital trust? What do you mean by that? What is digital trust?
Well, digital trust is, for us, a really important part. So we have a set of kind of core values that we use at Protect Young Eyes, and we teach parents about these items. And it's not just things that we've come up with. It's like what we see in parents and families who have kids who use technology well. They do certain things persistently and consistently. And one of those is to pursue authentic connection with your kids, right? So it's model the right behaviors. Number two is pursue authentic connection. And in that pursue authentic connection, I want us to build digital trust. And there are two ways. The number one way to build digital trust is to not freak out, not freak out, not freak out, not freak out as a parent. Okay. Like I said, more times.
Think about the third or fourth time, but I got it.
You got it. But I mean, the best, I think we need to stay calm as parents more. Like, you don't have to remind parents to get angry. We need to remind each other to be calm. Your kid will mess up. If your child has social media, they will make a mistake. If your child has an iPhone, they will make a mistake. Get over being surprised about that. Get over being angry about that. They need to know, am I going to be okay? And are you still okay with me? Be calm, be calm, be calm. That's how you build trust. And then number two is just having a posture of curiosity. If all of your tech conversations with your kiddos are about consequence, negativity, and yelling, then what are the chances are going to come to you when something horrible happens? Hey, what'd you look at? What video did you watch? Hey, you know, what game? I don't, if your kid, you know, if you got younger kids and they like watching other younger kids unwrap toys, which I think is mind numbing, then, yeah, then you're curious that that's what you do. Okay. I am horrible at the switch, and yet I sit down and shoulder to shoulder, right? So I want us to be more curious about how our kids are using technology so that we open up bridges of conversation, build digital trust, one brick at a time, so that when the things get hard, they know they can always land safely and softly with us. So that's what, you know, I just think it's an important concept for us to remember. Like, imagine as a parent, something horrible happened to your kid online. What if, because of your approach to the situation where they knew they were still loved, even though there were consequences afterwards, they still knew they were going to be okay, and you kind of talked about it calmly. What if you ended that conversation with more digital trust than when you started? Right? That would be the sign of success in something like that, right? And that's what I'm asking parents to aspire to in a world where I think the risk of some of these harms and the frequency with which some of these things could happen to them, you know, or is higher than it was not that many years ago. So
I love it. Don't freak out. Easier said than done, for sure. How can we get them to come back to being the son or daughter that they feel like they used to have and they've lost to this device?
The first thing that I would say to that parent, Jesse, is that everything we're about to do is going to be very hard. Very hard. And you're going to question whether it's right, because you are going to watch your child suffer for a little while. And that's okay. Right? That's okay. You have to be asking yourself, what am I willing to do to get my son back or my daughter back? I just posted, so recently we redid our entire Fortnite review, which Fortnite just recently, as people listening to this may or may not know, they have gone through a massive explosion of users recently because of some really brilliant business moves they've made. And we redid our review, sent it out there, thousands of parents read it. And we had a mom post on our Instagram post about it, how they took the radical step. I'm not saying this is for everybody. I just want to try to paint the picture of, you know, what are you willing to do as a parent, right, to get your kid back? For a summer, they decided to like move out to the country. Like they rented, they moved out of the city and went to the country where there was less distraction. And her sons, she had two middle school sons, they started playing outside, they started using chainsaws, they started running around the woods, they started building stuff. And she, it was like this detox that they intentionally chose for her children. And she said it was unbelievable. Like she saw her boys again, right? And so I know not everybody listening to this has the means or the ability to move out to the country to get your kids back. But I will tell you that whatever you choose to do will be difficult. And you may have to take a step like that. So I think it's important to jump in and to tell your son or daughter, I've learned some things and I know that much of what you're experiencing online is my fault. This is my thing. I did this. I want to own that. I want to own that I didn't do a good enough job preparing you for this. I want to own that some of the anxiety, the stress that you're feeling right now is my fault. I need to own this. And what kind of parent would I be if I didn't step in to try to remove some of that from your life right now? So here are some of the ideas that I have. Boom, 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 boom. Lay them out. And just invite them in. Let them know what of those ideas they hate. Let them know what of those ideas they're willing to try. Give them and look for ways to give them a little bit of agency and a little bit of ownership in some ways of some of the things. Invite them into giving you suggestions on how you could use your technology better, right, as a parent, and own this with them. Most of the things that are good for your 12 or 13-year-old and how they navigate their technology are also good for 40 and 50 and 30-year-olds, okay? And so let's look at this as not an us versus them, but an us with them. We desperately want them to get this right, and we will do whatever it takes to get this right. But mom or dad, you've got to jump in. You have got to be committed to checking their phone. You've got to be committed to sticking to your guns on some things. You've got to be committed to, for the first couple of weeks, which is going to feel like a total withdrawal, and they're going to scream and yell and hate you, that you will get through it. That's the price to pay. And remember this, because I heard this once from Titania Jordan, who's one of the leaders over at Bark, the software and phone company. She and I were having a conversation. We were recording a podcast together. We were talking about online gaming. And she and I, we have sons around the same age, right? In that kind of, you know, 12 to 15 range between the two of us. We have four of them. And she said, Chris, it's something that parents really, they have to remember. When you take, and we were talking about screen time and games specifically. Something that we say at Protect Young Eyes is if you take the game or something away and your child turns into a rage-filled alter version of themselves, then that should be a signal to us. And what Titania said and expanded on it, which I love, is when that happens, you have to remember that this is brain against the game or brain against the device and not kid against parent. When we see our kid blow up like that, what does that do? That triggers our emotional response. It triggers some of our anger. So moms and dads, if you're going to make this decision, tell yourself right now, no matter how your son or daughter responds, it's not against you. It's not personal against you. That is a perfectly logical, neurological response. That should tell you something about the amygdala and their limbic system, not about their love or care or respect for you. And I think when we depersonalize it, we just, again, so much of this, Jesse, is little changes in our mindset as parents. Little changes like that. But I think that makes a radical difference, because if in the midst of their chaos and screaming and revolting, they see our calm, that's what they need.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's up to us to respond in the right way when we make some of those decisions. So not a lot, there isn't like a list of do A, B, C, D, and E, and you will have a detoxed child.
Yeah.
Right. There, you know, there are some of those are the easy things to do. The harder things are some of these more relational sort of aspects to it that I just want moms and dads to be ready for.
Yeah, man, it's going to be hard, but it's going to be worth it. And I've seen that firsthand with kids getting detox, getting off their phones. And then pretty soon, all of a sudden, they're out dribbling the basketball. They're connecting. They're wanting to hang out. They're wanting to be around people. And you're like, oh, this was a difficult, you know, first little bit. But now that they're over that hump, it gets a lot better.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
I can attest to that, exactly what you're saying. Of I've been in front of an audience of kids from a bunch of different schools, like 10, 15 different schools. And all right, hold up your phone. All right, let's look at screen time. And I want to hear, you know, from some of you, how many hours you're average on there a day. Oh, and you're probably someone who knows this better than anyone. 10 hours, 14 hours, 16 hours. There was kids that were over 20 hours in a day. I don't know if they're sleeping with the YouTube playing or how they're pulling it off.
Right. But
the thing that is so demoralizing to me is just seeing them waste their time on frivolous things, watching what other people are doing in their highlight reel, comparing themselves to them, and mostly just wasting their most valuable thing, their time, when they could be doing any other thing and be getting a master's degree. And, you know, for me, it would have been dribbling a basketball and sports,
right,
and other people, music or art or any of these things. And it's like you're literally have the competitive advantage, and it's going like this. It's getting rid of that thing. And I still think most people wouldn't be willing to make that sacrifice because they don't want to be leaders. And we're naturally followers. And we're going to go with, like you said, with that little pack and that little herd. And it makes it hard when you're the only one on the other side of that. But I wanted to ask you, in a perfect world, what would a teenager's relationship with his phone look like? As far as what things he's using and how much of his time he's dedicating to it each day and each week.
Yeah, boy, that's a good question. I think it depends on stage of life. I think for a junior high child, I've made it pretty clear that the device should be, you know, something that mom or dad is heavily involved in, that you use when necessary for connection with your friends. You use it when necessary to look things up. It's almost always used with permission, right? That you're asking, hey, can I? And that's probably good. You know, when it comes to then high schoolers and their relationship with technology, I think you first, it's the number is hard to pin. Instead, what I would say to high schoolers, and you were just alluding to this, Jesse, with what you were talking about with sports and things and Man, I know you could dribble circles around me, you know, but what you were saying is the seed of how I want us to turn that question. It's not how much should I, it's what things do I value? And then how does technology fit without deterring or distracting or distorting that value, right? So list out the things in life that are valuable to you. What are the things that you want? What are the things that are important to you? What are the things that at the end you'll go, I'm proud of that? And then say, how does technology augment, support, and not detract from those things, instead of coming with a number and then trying to fit everything around it, right? It's the old youth group adage of the rocks in the sand, right? You have three different size rocks in the sand, and you got this vial that you put them in. And if you put the big rocks in first, right, and there's an order. If you put I can't remember how it goes. Like if you put them in the wrong order, they don't fit. But if you put them in the right order, they all do, right? So it's like, get your values in place. Get the things that are important to you in place. Get the things that you want to share with your kids in the future in place. Get the things in line that when you're Googled, you're known for in place. And then put technology alongside those kinds of things. And that's going to be a little different. So that's why I don't want to come up with a one size fits all for this 14-year-old versus this 16-year-old, because values could change that answer. But I think that's the sequence with which I want them to come up with the answer to that question.
Yeah. Oh, so good, man. As we're talking about all this stuff, I'm like, man, I'm sure glad that I grew up during the time that I did, because it was a little simpler and there was a little less distractions and so many things you had to keep up with. So I want everyone to go check out your stuff, because you're really just leading the charge when it comes to helping parents and helping kids from destruction when it comes to their thoughts and their mind and their hearts. What kind of things are you guys doing at Protect Young Eyes that parents could come and check out and be a part of the community?
Yeah. So our website, Jesse, is where we share a lot of great guides and information and reviews, you know, whether it's Minecraft or Fortnite or Snapchat and what they're rolling out. And, you know, I meet regularly with some of these companies. They reach out to me for thoughts and ideas, and I have, you know, relationships that I keep with them to share what parents are sharing with me. But in terms of just needing some help, just come to protectyoungeyes.com. For those that are interested in a slightly deeper dive, Jesse, we do have a membership community. We call it the table. We want people to come together to have a conversation, because these things are easier when you're kind of working on it together. So parents don't even feel like they're on an island. Kids can feel that way, and parents can too. So that does have a subscription fee attached to it, but that's one-on-one help with things. If you want my advice on how to handle screen time with your kid, that's what you will get if you come to that space. And although I've banged on social media a fair amount in this conversation, we are, like you, fairly active out there and sharing as much as we can, you know, with parents who, you know, want just kind of day-to-day help on things in that way too. So that's how we're working with parents. And, you know, like you, when it comes to these sort of, you know, our lane is specifically in that digital wellness part of growing up. And we do a lot of talks in faith-based and secular schools on that I'm sure would complement great some of the things that you also say. You know, you're doing great work out there too, Jesse. But, you know, we just want to, in all those different arenas, our bottom line is we want to create safer digital spaces. So when it comes to schools, Jesse, we have a whole system of certification around systems and filters and policies and curriculum that schools can put in place to wrap that 7 hours that they control around their kids with safer digital spaces, which we hope then spills into the 17 hours when they're at home, so that the 7 and the 17 work well really together. So those are some of the systems and sort of bigger things that we're working on.
Amazing, man. That's so good. Yeah, let's get that out into more schools, into more people's hands. And that's very cool that they're coming to you now, some of these bigger platforms and technologies, and actually wanting to come up with some solutions so that kids aren't hurting. You know, because when you don't know it, you kind of look like, man, are these people just evil and chasing money? And it's hard not to get jaded to think like, well,
it is.
It kind of seems like that, but at least, and even if they're faking the funk, to be like, you know, hey, we're going to check this thing Hopefully some of that goodness that you're doing can rub off on them. So I want to ask you one final question here. But
Sure.
before I do, I want to give a little testament, since you kind of shared a little bit in my own life. About 3 years ago, I saw that I was comparing myself to other people a lot. And seeing the success in their careers and the shows and the connections and all the things that they were getting. And I was like, how come that's happening to them, not me? I work harder than them. I've been at it longer. All of these things that, as an adult, this is like the stuff that we're talking to kids about. And so I'm like, well, I need to live this in my own life. And like you said, kids will pattern and mirror what they're seeing in the adults and the parents around them.
Yeah.
And so I made the decision I was going to do it, one, because it was the best thing to do for my own mental health, my own happiness, and two, as something I could talk about from stage and hopefully to be an example and not just talk the talk, but walk the walk. And I went, and I think I followed 400 or 500 people on Instagram, these different places. I went and followed almost all of them. I got a few mean FaceTime calls from some different people who like had apps or something that told them that I unfollowed them. And I had heart to hearts with them, and I said, "Look, I'm actually doing this because, or I did it because it was something that I was struggling with, and I was finding it was more of a negative and a distraction in my life.
Yeah.
Having pretty girls that are posting the pictures of them out at the beach and all those things. I'm like, there's nothing that serves me from having this, even though you're my friend and I know you. It's just, I'll be your friend in real life, but I don't need to see all the pictures of you at the beach." And all those other things that were distractions, I got my time back. I got more fulfillment and happiness, and I've been way more productive and successful in
Amazing.
areas that count from doing that. So that would be my little two cents of how even me, like, and it's still something that I could easily fall back into, is
Yep.
easily a distraction. I don't believe that I have the type of discipline, so I have to have systems in place that only allows me to do it for a little bit of time each day, and I know exactly how I'm going to use it. And most of it's responding to people because we're active on here. But it changed my life definitely for the better. So,
Wow.
from adult to kid, I think everyone, like you said, it's hard to do. It's not going to be easy, but you get to choose your hard. So that was a cool kind of personal little experience for me. But I want to know from you, Chris, to kind of wrap this up. If you were going to go back to your younger self and you are about to be a parent for the first time in 2023, what would be your advice to yourself, knowing what you know now that you didn't know then?
I think, Jesse, I would look at everybody the same. I think one of the things that was most toxic to my growing up was a hierarchy of popular and not, and who was cool and was not. And man, I wish I could go back to the earlier version of me and say, dude, just be ridiculously kind to all the humans. And treat them well. And because there's no one that would look back on that childhood and regret that, as opposed to the other way around. So yeah, I just think I wish I could give that younger version of myself just a deeper appreciation for sort of like the sacredness and the goodness of humanity, and not get bought into all of that just noise of junior high and growing up that is so easy to. And maybe that just came, comes with a confidence I just didn't have. And I really wish I would have had that. So those are some things that I would say. Shake that 13-year-old Chris, the one that fit inside of middle school lockers, that little guy. Yeah, that
I
one.
love it, man. It's so good. It's so true. And that's one thing I always laugh about, especially at like around the middle school age, but it carries over to high school and the rest of life, is they're so worried about what everyone else is thinking about them. You're so, and then if you look at those other people, they're worried about what you're thinking about them. So everyone's going around in this little circle of worrying, and actually everyone's worried about themselves. So no, like you said, hey, it's going to be okay, and it's not the end of the world. Most people are worried about what's going on with them and their own insecurities, so they're going to forget. So don't beat yourself up about it.
Amen. You
Chris,
got it.
This was amazing. Thank you so much for your time. We'll have everyone check you out. We'll put the links below. And I just want to thank you again because I truly believe you are leading the charge on this thing that is, I'm seeing it every day with the parents and families and kids that we're working with. Like, literally, I have been obsessed with this lately because I see it just ruining kids' lives. So thank you so much for some practical advice that these parents can work with, and they'll come follow you for the latest of everything that's constantly changing so fast. So thank you for all the good you're putting into the world.
Thank you, Jesse. It's been a great time talking to you. Take care.
You too.